Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how garlic makes a big difference in fighting harmful bacteria, University of Copenhagen, and how yoga has finally been proven scientifically to be good for you, as if we needed science to be the final arbiter of what is good for us. And going to the gym in later life could lower dementia risk, Australian National University. And how it's not the amount, but where fat is stored that's critical for heart attack, stroke, and diabetes risk, Harvard Medical School, and more on health and healing today. And then I'm going to share a lot of insights on the environment and why we should be paying attention even if we're not immediately impacted. It's much like saying I live in a 1,000-room apartment and my room is fine, but 10 rooms are burning, and then it's 100 rooms burning, but I'm not burning. We are living in cognitive denial of the world that is being adversely affected by adverse weather events. So I'm going to just show you what's going on around the world and why we can do something about it and why we should. Then I'm going to give you a list of some of those organizations that live in perpetual global warming denial. They simply do not see what's happening to the environment as necessarily the fault of industry or humans. Well, that's good. If you own a big industry that's polluting and contributing to global warming, and then, of course, you see the money trail. The corporations spend a lot of their profit into foundations which are tax deductible, but they still control the money. It's their foundation. The foundation then gives money to think tanks and doctors and researchers who will always come up with the right information. You're not responsible. It's something else. So we're going to show you who these people are. I will give a name to these people so at least you'll know what not to pay attention to. And if you were like many people today, you probably now think that Michael Moore is a serial sexual abuser. It's not true. But it shows you how easy it is to put fake news up on the internet and have other people, based upon their ideology or political leanings, spread it. So today, one of our scholars in residence and the executive producer of our program, Richard Gale, will come on to talk about some of these fake news sites and how do they get away with it? How are they not sued? And what happens if you don't do your homework, you simply accept a headline as being true? Well, on my side, I clearly stated, I posted to show you how easy it is to perpetuate misinformation with the intent of saying it's fake news. Nothing in this story is real. Nothing is honest. They've slandered him. And think of all the people who then have a negative opinion without doing any homework or research or finding the truth. And in today's very volatile environment, it's very easy to accuse without any reference to what is actually the truth. And these sites are proliferate. They're everywhere. And on vaccines, for example, you'll have almost every single person who has looked at vaccines honestly and objectively and with deep research and found that they are wanting in their claims of safety and efficacy, they're attacked. And then everything that is challenging vaccine is attacked. And they have very detailed stories with quoting physicians. This is all fake news. So we'll get to that as well. I want to share something that just came in on health and wellness. It's called high aluminum found in autism brain tissue that was pathologically significant. Now, this is from Robert F. Kennedy and Dr. Christopher Exley's study on aluminum in the brains of 10 donors who had autism. And they contained some of the highest levels of aluminum ever recorded in human brain. And the aluminum was found in the brain's immune cells and the microglia and the cells which provide support and protection for the neurons, that's the glia, Well, how does a 15-year-old have as much aluminum in his brain as someone who is many decades older, who has died of familial Alzheimer's disease? So Dr. Exley's findings have shocking implications for today's generation of children who receive 5,000 micrograms of aluminum in vaccines by the age of 18 months and up to 5,250 additional micrograms if all recommended boosters and the human papillomavirus and meningitis vaccines are administered. That's 10,000 micrograms. And it takes 1,000 micrograms to make 1 milligram. So you're talking about 5 milligrams of mercury. Wow. This is what is said by the World Mercury Project team. Quote, scientists have been aware of aluminum's neurotoxicity for decades. Although aluminum's apologists have tried to shroud the metal's risks in manufactured controversy, a growing number of reports by researchers in the United Kingdom and France and Canada and Israel and the United States and elsewhere has furnished substantive evidence linking aluminum to neuropathology, including the epidemics of Alzheimer's disease and autism spectrum disorder. Aluminum levels were particularly high in the male brains, including a 15-year-old boy with autism spectrum disorder, who had the study's single highest brain aluminum measurement. Dr. Christopher Exley, one of the world's leading experts on aluminum toxicity, has shown that chronic intoxication with myriad forms of this ubiquitous and omnipresent metal is exacting a high price on human health. Dr. Exley and other aluminum experts, such as molecular biologist Dr. Lucia Tomcevic, have confirmed that aluminum readily and actively traverses the blood-brain barrier to selectively accumulate in brain tissues, where it induces an unwelcome change in brain biochemistry. Here's what Dr. Exley says. He says, quote, there are no normal levels of brain aluminum, meaning, in lay language, its presence in brain tissue at any level, could be construed as abnormal. And in light of the fact that even minute amounts of aluminum can have adverse neurological consequences, Dr. Exley's newest paper, which reports on the first ever study of aluminum in autism spectrum disorder brain tissue, is groundbreaking. It was published in Journal of Trace Elements in Medicine and Biology, and the paper documents some of the highest values of aluminum in human brain tissue ever recorded. Using a two-pronged study design, the researchers measured and characterized aluminum deposits in the brain tissues from these autism spectrum disorder donors, most of whom died in their teens or 20s. So what do we know now? We know that all of these vaccines contain mercury as an adjuvant, and that mercury goes to the brain barrier and gets into the brain and causes massive neurological problems, especially to the glial cells. And there are three broad categories of the non-neuronal glial cells, including the astrocytes, which support neuronal signaling, meaning a signal going from one brain cell to another, and then also the cells necessary to create myelin and microglia responsible for repairing damage. So in effect, it would be like putting sugar into your gas tank, and once that hits, goes to your carburetor and your engine, it's all going to be wrecked. That is what aluminum does in the brain. And yet we're putting it into the brain. And then the people putting it into the brain, the pharmaceutical company, they're denying it's responsible. Well, they can deny all they want, but we have found the truth. And the truth is that we shouldn't be using aluminum in anything. It's a danger to everyone. And by the way, thank you for the 6,000 people who've downloaded that show. Go to the archives and download Tuesday's show, 2.5 hours on the whole history of the Clintons. I do not believe that any reasonable and responsible, open-minded person who hears that and verify the facts, every single thing stated in there has been vetted for accuracy by scholars and lawyers, And then ask yourself, could you still support someone like that? Could you work for someone like that? Would you vote for someone like that? Then you ought to vote for Lucky Luciano, dig him up, and Vito Genovese, and all the other Carlo Gambino, because they had more integrity. Anyhow, you can listen, go to the archives. I'll give you the phone number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Anyhow, don't trust anything any of these economists tell you today, unless it's Joseph Stiglitz or Michael Hudson, Greg Palast. There are some legitimate, decent economists, but they're not carrying the water for the people on Wall Street or the other pathologically dysfunctional people. So let's go to the health nutrition. That's my little commentary on what I think of the banking system and all the people who work for it. You know, we get back to that good German notion. At the height of the German genocide against Jews, communists, socialists, gypsies, blacks, were there any good Germans? Of course there were. A lot of Germans were against the war, not only in Germany, but also in Czechoslovakia, which was in effect taken over and annexed, as well as Poland. Are there any good people working on Wall Street in the banking community? Of course there are, but none of them run the banks. None of them are on their board of directors. None of them are the officers. None of them are the junior partners, senior partners, or the up-and-coming best and brightest out of Harvard. All of those people are complicit because they all know that nothing they're doing is making it a better world, helping the existing world, helping the unemployed, of which there are 96 million. Don't trust any of the figures you're being told by our pathologically dysfunctional and apocalyptically fraudulent Treasury Department. Our actual unemployment is around 28%. So, yeah, you got good people, but boy, they're not the ones who have anything to do with pushing the whole momentum forward. Equity partners? None. Hedge funds? None. Nope. If you're making money and someone's losing money in proportion to what you're making it, you do not get respect. Now over to health. This is the University of Copenhagen, and it's an article talking about harmful bacteria. Now, you would never eat an egg that had been outside all afternoon. I promise you that night you'd be in a hospital. We have a lot of pathogenic bacteria all around us. Prudent and proper hygiene of our food, washing everything. Remember, you don't take an apple and eat it, or some grapes and eat them, or cherries and eat them because they look good. 24 separate hands have touched almost every single piece of produce before you touch it. How many of those people were in the fields where there's no portisans, there's no water, there's no toilet paper? So you got feces all over that. You have all kinds of bacteria. So it's just prudent. Wash your food. When it comes in, just simply, you can put apple cider vinegar, put hydrogen peroxide, but you can do a wash. You can use one of the veggie sprays, spray it on, agitate it, wash it off. That's fine. But then we end up looking at how many people are sick each year. There's an article in Scientific Reports, the journal, and there's a lot of harmful bacteria in our society. Not millions, nor tens of millions, but rather over 100 million people end up with poisonings each year, generally from harmful bacteria. So along comes garlic. And what garlic does is something absolutely remarkable. Garlic interferes with the communication system in the bacteria, Staphylococcus. And garlic communicates with the system so that the Staphylococcus aureus and Pseudomonas is inhibited in the small regulatory RNA molecules. How so? Because of its smell. That wonderful smell of garlic when it's being sautéed, that's sulfur. And the sulfur-rich compounds also inflicted damage on the bacteria's protective biofilm, rendering it more susceptible to attack. Now, the two types of bacteria that have been studied are very important because they're causing a lot of problems. They're called Staphylococcus aureus, A-U-R-E-U-S, and Pseudomonas, P-S-E-U-D-O-M-O-N-A-S. And they actually belong to two very different bacterial families and are normally fought using different methods. But the garlic is able to fight both of them at once and therefore can prove an effective functional food rather than use that than antibiotics. So there you have something that can help you. So think of all the ways you can make garlic. You can saute garlic and then bake a potato, dice up the potato and put raw onion with sauteed garlic in it with some olive oil and Himalayan sea salt and pepper. It is delicious. You can mix some garlic into brown rice in quinoa. And you can take sauteed garlic and then blend that in a blender with both almond butter and avocado, squirt lemon juice in it, and then use that as a pate. Put it on some rice crackers. Delicious snack. So get garlic into your body each day. Doing yoga, you're on the right side of science because scientific demonstration now can prove the benefits of yoga. And yoga has been going on for a long time, and it's penetrated deep now into mainstream American culture. And it's one of the most positive developments of the last full century. If you find that yoga gives us a capacity to focus, to be more proactive, to enhance our creative thought, and to respond to crisis with new perspective, then that's what science is finding. So it's not all in your head. Brain researchers have detected improvements in cognition and emotional well-being associated with meditation and yoga, as well as differences in how meditation and prayer affect the brains of those who believe in higher beings versus those who don't. There's an article in Neuroscience and Society, and it was sponsored by the AAAS, that's the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And these were neuroscientists that said that not only were the brain images in a study of people who meditated different from those who did not, other research showed that certain changes in performance, such as improved scores on graduate record exams, occurred in those who were doing mindful meditation and also those doing yoga. There's also a professor at Harvard Medical School, and he said that both the yoga and meditation shows that the brain has a great capacity to evolve, in effect, to change. And there was an article in Science Magazine that talked about the benefits that can be seen in brain scans, or MRIs, images of the prefrontal cortex, increased concentrations of the neurotransmitter GABA, and greater functional connectivity between the caudate nucleus and a number of cortical regions responsible for effective cognitive function. So in lay language, yoga and meditation, either or both, enhance the capacity of the brain. And finally, if you're going to the gym and you're over the age of 50, good for you, because you're lowering your risk of dementia. This is from Australian National University, and the study showed that those who went to the gym, who exercised on a daily basis, quote, as our population ages, the number of people with dementia will increase, but an active lifestyle offers real opportunities for reducing dementia risk. And the researchers observed 400 people over the age of 60 from Canberra at several different stages over time, and those who were exercising every day had less brain shrinkage. So that's good to know. One last thing from Harvard Medical School. We all know that we should not be overweight. But during the past 20 years, A lot of research has come out showing that people with that apple-shaped bodies, meaning you have the fatness is in your abdomen, your belly, you have a greater risk of heart disease, diabetes, and stroke than if you have the pear shape, meaning you're fatter in your hips, your buttocks, and your thighs. So the current study looked at the differences in fat distribution patterns among overweight and obese men and women and their associated cardiometabolic risk, and it reconfirmed that. It's not the amount of fat in your body, but where it's stored that increases your risk of heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. So this was a part of the National Center for Health Statistics research. And how bad is it? Whoa. As of today, the newest study, 70% of all Americans are overweight or obese. Wow. 70%? It's never been that bad. So we are just becoming morbidly unhealthy. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I want to share some information on our environment now that is very important. This is something that I'm very familiar with, having written several articles and producing three separate documentaries on our veterans. This is from Al Jazeera, from Dar Jamel, and a person who I have a lot of respect for Dar. He is an extraordinarily good journalist. And it's about Iraq and the environment, and war's legacy of cancer. Here's what he's saying. Contamination from depleted uranium munitions, that's all of the gun, the bullets, all the bombs, they were all made from depleted uranium. Another military-related pollution is suspected of causing a sharp rise in congenital birth defects and cancer cases and other illnesses through much of Iraq. Quote, many prominent doctors and scientists contend that depleted uranium contamination is also connected to the recent emergence of diseases that were not previously seen in Iraq, such as new illnesses in the kidney, lungs, and liver, as well as total immune system collapse. Depleted uranium contamination may also be connected to the steep rise in leukemia, renal, and anemia cases, especially among children, being reported throughout many Iraqi governments. There has also been a dramatic jump in miscarriages and premature births among Iraqi women, particularly in areas where heavy U.S. military operations occurred, such as Fallujah. Official Iraqi government statistics show that prior to the outbreak of the first Gulf War in 1991, the rate of cancer cases in Iraq was 40 out of every 100,000 people. Then after 1995, after Bush Sr. dropped the bombs, depleted uranium bombs, it had increased from 40 per 100,000 to 800 per 100,000. And then after George Bush II invaded in 2003, it doubled to 1,600 out of 100,000. Current estimates show an increased trend continuing. Dr. Haddad believes there is a direct correlation between increasing cancer rates and the amount of bombings carried out by U.S. forces in particular areas. Quote, my colleagues and I have all noticed an increase in Fallujah of congenital malformations, sterility, and infertility. So, my perspective. When doing Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own, I let the soldiers know that I was opposed to the war, military intervention, but I was not opposed to them. They're human beings. They were fighting, more often than not, a battle without fully understanding the truth of it. Most people are that way. They believe what the propaganda says instead of doing their own independent research. But a lot of these GIs were sick. And some of them were sick without ever seeing combat. So it wasn't post-traumatic stress disorder. And so many were sick. It went from thousands into the hundreds of thousands that there were finally hearings, but the hearings were all fraudulent. These were the hearings that Hillary Clinton testified and others for the government saying there's no such thing as Gulf War Syndrome. Well, they were wrong. There are 40 separate studies showing Gulf War Syndrome is real, and including the vaccines they received, which were experimental vaccines, and got a lot of them, and there was no informed consent. Also, they were exposed to depleted uranium. Now, the person most responsible for informing us is Doug Rocky. And Doug was sent over by the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, to determine how bad is this depleted uranium. And he did a wonderful report, meaning it was really honest. It told the truth. And that went nowhere. And he became a leading critic of these wars because it was putting people at exposure, both the inhabitants and the occupying forces. So when I had filming all over Iraq, interviewing GIs in Iraq and civilians, there was a hospital near Fallujah. And the doctors were wanting photographs that they had taken of these babies put into the film. And we were concerned about censorship, and we were also concerned that the camera crew's images would be, we were told, they're not going to let this out of the country. Now, mind you, other embedded media knew this. No single media, not one, reported it. So we got it. We got those out of the country, but without going through Iraq to do it. We had other means of getting it out and back in the United States. And I put these, now how many were there? Over 5,000 photographs. I selected only about 30. And at the end of the premiere is where I put them. And many of you probably were at that premiere. There were 1,020 people. It was at the AMC Theater on 42nd Street, the largest theater we could find in New York. And in fact, Michael Moore was in the audience. And I saved it for the end. And then you start to see the child healthy and the child with cancers. And then you see the children who are born with birth defects, such as a cyclops baby, one eye in the middle of their head, a baby born with two brains, a baby born with no brain in their skull. The types of defects you see are just excruciating to look at. And when asked by the doctors, did you bring this to the American officials? Everybody knew about it. Everybody knew, and no one did a thing. Because the Pentagon lies about everything. The Defense Department, you'd be lucky to find 3 people out of 2 million involved with their military-industrial complex who'd be willing to bring something forward to tell the truth, because then we would be morally responsible for causing tens of thousands of deaths and deformities in children, and the world would not accept that. Because you can't say that a baby is a terrorist. And someone would actually have enough of a brain to say, well, you mean what you're doing is causing this birth defect? So much so that doctors are warning parents not to have children. So there are certain crimes against humanity that not even the United States could get away with. And so there was a news blackout. Still is. I've yet to see this reported anywhere. You can go online. It's free. Go up to YouTube and you can watch any one of the 3 films. But in that one, Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own, you'll see those photographs. So that report on, now they're talking about it, at least Al Jazeera is. Also, there's another nightmare scenario out there, and that is that we, the United States, and by extension the American people that fund our government, are funding the Saudi government and other governments to buy our weapons of mass destruction that are being used on the innocent civilians in Yemen. Yemen right now is the worst place in the world to be, and they have almost no food. They have the largest cholera epidemic in the world, over 500,000 people. And it's all because of the Saudis. And keep in mind, there's probably upwards of 20 million people who are facing famine-like conditions. All the infrastructure, hospitals, stores, factories, everything has been destroyed in Yemen by Saudi Arabia and the United States. We actually have boots on the ground. We provide all the weapons. We provide all the planes, the missiles, and the intelligence. So we are co-responsible. And not you wouldn't know that this existed. And if you did watch 60 Minutes, you would know the United States was responsible for all this. So how can you have 500,000 cases of cholera in one country, a small country, and the United States and the United Kingdom should be completely condemned for complicity? Thousands are sick. The hospitals have been destroyed. There's no medicines for these people. There's no clean water for everyone. So this is what we, the American public, and all these war hawks, which are everyone on Fox, God, these people are demented. Is there no one left over there that has an IQ above 7? What is it with you people? We accept that you're fascistic. We accept that you're neocon. We accept that you are living in this delusion of exceptionalism. We accept that. That's who you are. But at what point do you realize that we are the cause of all these problems because we keep invading countries and occupying them? Do you really think anyone is appreciative of the fact that we occupy their country, destroy their environment, destroy their livelihoods, displace them from their homes, put people in regimes that are oppressive, and somehow they're supposed to do nothing or appreciate it? But there's just no common sense or reason whatsoever out of that network. Anyhow, but I'd like to see the entire staff, everyone from secretaries and janitors, everyone in that Fox network, spend 1 month in Yemen, but you have to live as the average Yemeni lives. You cannot have any support. You have to live as they live. Then come back and tell me that you still believe that that country should be bombed or we should send more planes in. I heard one of these moronic comments last night about, yeah, we need more money for the military. Our military is starving. Our military is starving. Your IQ is less than 5, woman. You are dumb, or you're complicit, or you're incapable. But I guess you're in the perfect place. You're on Fox as a commentator. We give more money to the military-industrial complex than we do for everything else combined. Schools, housing, clothing, food stamps, everything. And you think they need more? Have you gone out to Arizona to look at the junkyard that's as big as an entire city with planes that are just rotting away out there? But some politician got reelected because he said, I brought jobs to our community. How vile have we become? And yet, where is the money to de-ghettoize our own cities? Some people in America are living as if they were in a third world nation. And that's only going to get worse. And if you think it's not getting worse, and I talked about food riots happening out there. This is just last week. Morocco food riot leaves 15 dead. Quote, a stampede in a southern Moroccan village left at least 15 people dead and 5 others injured on Sunday as food was being distributed. There just wasn't enough food. And that's just one episode in one small town. And you've got 32 different countries that don't have enough food for their citizens. Yet we have plenty of money for war. And also, the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone demonstrates dangers of industrial agriculture and factory farming. This is from the Natural Blaze, a good site, by the way. Quote, if one is truly concerned about climate change and wondering where to begin to reverse the damage being done to our planet, a great place to make changes would be the modern industrial farming and agricultural model. In addition to the harm being done by the overuse of pesticides and herbicides and fungicides, and the overuse of nitrogen fertilizers and runoff from animal feed lots, it's causing a unique ecological disaster. In the Gulf of Mexico, scientists have recently announced they have measured the largest oceanic dead zone ever recorded just off the coast of Louisiana and Mississippi at the mouth of the Mississippi River. The seasonal dead zone is an area of water where oxygen levels are too low to support life due to an extreme water pollution. The major factor in the creation of dead zones is unnaturally increased levels of nitrogen in the water, although other issues related to water pollution do play significant roles, such as the loss of perennial cover, roads and highways, the construction of artificial drainage systems, and the loss of wetlands. Nutrients from artificial fertilizers flowing into streams and rivers in the ocean from agriculture and wastewater stimulate an overgrowth of algae, which then decomposes. The result is hypoxia, or lack of oxygen in the water, causing marine life either to flee or to die. It's time to return to organic and ethical food production. Boy, I agree with that. Now, we are going to go over and say hello to Richard Gale, who's standing by on Skype, to discuss fake news sites and why you should be very conscientious if you see anything that's been sensationalized or accusatory, and then take your time to follow the source to see if it's credible or if it's fake news, because there's a lot of fake news. I might also mention that for those of you in this audience who are activists, maybe you're an activist to support stopping hydrofracking or closing down nuclear power plants or to stop genetically engineering food or at least have it labeled if it is, or stopping the mandatory vaccinations of dangerous vaccines, there's a certainty that you're now on watch list and you've probably been hacked or you have been trolled where fake news stories about you, absolutely outrageous slander, is permeating the entire web, even in the industries where you work, to try to slander or libel your reputation. Now, someone not knowing the truth and not having advantage of speaking with you would not know this. But this is being done at such a level by the pharmaceutical industry, which is utterly corrupt to the bone, and by governmental agencies that themselves are turning their efforts against the American activist to make every American activist fear that they'll end up on an enemies list, because now anyone who is active against the government or major corporations is considered in the minds of the FBI, another criminal organization, as a domestic terrorist. So we just want to put this into a larger context of how bad it's becoming. Richard, tell us the story that should be concerned with.
Thank you. Gary and I had this, this kind of came up for us because of allegations that were made against Michael Moore for sexual harassment. And we did a follow-up on this. Fox News had picked up this story. And it all came down to a single source. And this kind of, well, I'll just open up this story here about fake news, and I could give some advice on how to and sources people can go to. It all came down to a particular site called Freedom. It was called Freedom Junction. And Junction is spelled J-U-N-K-S-H-U-N. And this is a network of sites that create fake news, fake stories, and they go viral. There is actually a monetary incentive for some people to create these sites. These are not journalists. These are not people doing out any investigative reporting. You know, with the entire spread of the internet, where a story can go through the social media, it goes viral, it goes to other countries. There's a monetary incentive behind this too, because the person who designs these sites, they're just generating clicks, and that generates money for them through the advertising revenue to be made on their website. So a lot of this is fiction, it's satire, and that was the case in all these stories about Michael Moore and sexual harassment. I think one of the things listeners need to realize, as Gary had said, that you need to know your source if a story comes in. And we receive in our email box many emails that listeners will forward us different stories. And I, very often I have to fact check some of these and I find out that they're bogus. They can seem very compelling. They seem very often they're kind of conspiratorial, but we need to check these. So sometimes if you don't hear a story being reported that you sent over to us, it's because we've done a check on it. We found that it was just fake news. If a story, a headline draws your attention, just be certain to read the entire story through before you make any acceptance of his claims. You know, headlines never tell the entire story itself. Even when we write articles and we're going to send them out to different sites for posting, we have to spend a lot of time with just the headline, the title of the article, because that's the way you generate traffic. That just happens to be the game that's played now on the internet. so fake authors. Many of these people, for example, the author behind the original story of Michael Moore's phony sexual dalliances. This is a fake author. He has many. He's a troll. He has many, many names that he uses on various different sites. So you need to be able to check who these authors are. Look for. There was one fake story who's credited to a doctor with 14 Peabody board awards and a couple Pulitzer prizes, but it was totally made up. Often these fake sites will cite or fake stories. Excuse me. up in the Berkshires, and it's gotten very cold here. Often these other fake sites will cite different official sounding sources or agencies as being the source of their info. They'll sound like very professional names. Check them. A lot of them are just make believe. If there's a story you feel is compelling, do a Google search. See what other sites are carrying it. If there's no legitimate or a recognizable or notable site that's carrying the story, you could be pretty certain it's fake. And look and see what other stories they're having. If a story looks like it's compelling to you, but then you go to the site and you find that there's also a story about space aliens living under Yellowstone Park that are ready to set off a volcano, well, you could be pretty certain this is a bogus site as well. Now, many of these stories are not 100% false, and this is a common practice of both the left and right media, where they will take a legitimate story and then twist it for political or social purposes. Or very often they'll take a story that happened a long time ago that was real, was legitimate, but then they will give it a new bogus headline, repost it as something being current for some political motive. This happened just a CNN story that happened a little over a year ago, and then they just gave it a new misleading headline and published it with a recent publishing date. Even a lot of we've seen in the past, a lot of film footage of supposed riots or some bombing or was taken from old footage years ago and just to kind of give emphasis on some story that was being that was more current. So those are just some of the guidelines I would give to people, but I would mention a couple of websites that I think are reliable you can go to. Probably the best one is factcheck.org, and that is factcheck.org, and that's through the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Southern California. Robert Scheer from Truthdig is associated with the Annenberg. That's a reliable one. Snopes is very good, although they have Snopes.com, although they have their own particular biases towards conspiracy things. So if there's stories that are anti-vaccine, for example, or maybe like concerning the smart meters that was mentioned, they're gonna lean. They might call those fake news stories. So there's a bias there. There's another one if you're just looking at political news.
I would not use them at all. I find them just way too biased. Fact check is great. I would leave it at that. We got to move on, but I thank you, Richard, for coming on, just informing people, because I'm sure many people on the left were concerned about these allegations against Michael, and it took us under 3 minutes to find that they were fake. Yeah, all right? And you gave people a good source to check whether or not there's something that's legitimate, and we get these all day long. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, thank you, that's Richard Gale. I want to mention a few organizations or individuals that are in climate denial. These are denials, and I would not trust them. Accuracy in Media, Acton Institute, Adam Smith Institute, African Center for Advocacy and Human Development, Alberta Prosperity Fund, the Alternate Solution Institute, American Rising, American Association of Blacks in Energy, American Council for Capital Formation, American Council on Science and Health. And boy, I consider that the most challenging. I debated the head of that once on television about the dangers of sugar. Boy, in fact, I'm sending them over a whole bunch of new science showing that the Sugar Institute people hid the science showing how dangerous sugar was. The American Energy Alliance, the American Enterprise Institute, that's probably the godfather of all, because it's one of the most powerful. The American Fuel and Petroleum Manufacturers, American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEX, the worst of the worst, American Petroleum Institute, American Traditional Institute, Americans for Prosperity, another organization that I would not trust, Americans for Tax Reform, Atlas Network, Australian Libertarian Society, Australian Economic Center, Ayn Rand Institute. Boy, anyone who believes anything from the Ayn Rand Institute based upon Ayn Rand should question themselves. And then the Koch brothers, the American Enterprise Institute, the Cato Institute, Beacon Hill Institute, Heartland Institute, Heritage Foundation, Institute for Energy Research, Manhattan Institute for Policy, the Science and Environmental Policy Project, the George C. Marshall Institute, and then people as individuals like John Bolin, you see him all the time, Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham, Newt Gingrich, Don Eastbrook, Fred Singer, Rupert Murdoch, Steve Miller, Mark Moreno, the founder of Climate Depot, Christopher Horner, Merrill Ebell, Steve Milloy, Patrick Michaels, Christopher Mockton, Sarah Palin, and James Inouye. Those are people. There are more, but at least I gave you a list of some people who I would challenge, because they are not going to support anything when it comes to how bad the environment is and what role we in industry played in causing it. We're going to now, I told you we'd go to this, this white woman is speaking some truth. That's what it's labeled. Let's hear what she has to say.
They poison vaccines for our sons and our daughters. Call it conspiracy, but it doesn't faze me. Watch some world star hip hop and see if I'm crazy. Dumb upon dumb, the dumbing down worked. They can't answer a question, but they know how to twerk. And before you think that you're any better with your degree in hand and pocket protector, answer this. You voting for left or the right? Illusion of choice in a rigged fight. Television for multiple personalities. One watches news, the other reality. Both have the same owners, both have the same writers, both have the same purpose, to kill our desires. Working our jobs, we are now so complacent. Photographing our food is now entertainment. We can't afford thrills. We can't even relax. Can you even clear your head without a Xanax? Or Prozac or Ambien? Go down the list. Who gave us these issues that Big Pharma can fix? They say harmful ingredients in such small amounts can't hurt anyone, but it's paramount. 69 doses of vaccines is what's on schedule by the time you're 16. Pharmaceutical lobbyists are second to none. In the past 7 years, they spent $800 million. That's chump change in investment return. Once you see, cancer alone is a $500 billion a year industry. As I mentioned before, this is one of the ways they've taken control of the people these days. We pay to be poisoned. I know that sounds nuts. Got a computer? Bill Gates thanks us. Watch Innovating to Zero, Gates' TED Talk stand to reduce carbon emissions, a population control plan. In his own words, here's the goal. If we do a great job with vaccines, healthcare, and birth control, Look at the millions of dollars he's so generously given to make geoengineering a cure for emissions. Look up at the sky. Contrails my ass. Gates talks about sunblocking with sulfuric acid. That shit rains down into our water supply, seeps into our crops. You can see the trees die. Maybe I'm crazy, or maybe I'm not. But there's things that I notice that happen a lot. Like when important bills pass, it's sleight of hand so you miss. Don't look at that. Hey, look at this. On April 18th, 2013, CISPA passed during Boston bombing. During the scare of Ebola, the UN passed what essentially is a global Patriot Act. You know, the Patriot Act that excludes due process for the nation and leaves extremists up to interpretation, which leads to things like TSA, Guantanamo Bay, and invasions of privacy by the NSA. If you have nothing to hide, why do you care about this? Because of the things that make you a suspected terrorist. Owning a gun or precious metals, activism's too far, or rocking a Ron Paul sticker on the back of your car. The Read the Bill Act is proposed legislation that requires Congress to read bills proposed for our nation. Are you kidding me? It's not common sense to actually read the bills. Fucking dense. Oh, get all offended by the word I just used. You should be offended by what's in your food. Reading the labels of food that we eat requires a linguist to get a science degree. I can't pronounce most of the words on the list, let alone know what the hell that it is.
So, one woman telling her mind to you. I'm Gary Noll. We're up to the end of our program. And if you haven't had an opportunity, please listen over the archives to a very powerful and honest discussion of the historical lineage of the Clintons. And by putting it in full perspective, their entire career in a chronological order, and every single statement has been verified. This is not hearsay. Then ask yourself, how did the Democratic Party acquiesce its principles, what it stood for, what it represented, how it helped so many people from the poor to not invading countries, to supporting infrastructure, to supporting the rights of unionists, to supporting women's rights and children's rights. It did so much good, and then it went off tracks. And the Clintons were responsible because they created the new Democrats. And you have to go back and take a look to see how it all happened. And then when you do, then you can make an appropriate choice, whatever that choice is, your choice. But at least you won't be making it based upon limited information. You can go over and just listen over your computer. Go to progressiveradionetwork.com. Go to the archives. It was Tuesday's Progressive Commentary Hour. I'll give you a phone number to call, 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.